So there's this story that my mom has told me that when I was like maybe 4 years old, I came running out of the bathroom crying, felt really guilty. And she was like, "What's wrong? It's okay. It's okay. What's wrong?" And I was like, "I knocked over that thing Dad does." And she was like, "Oh no, Jessie's just old enough now that she recognizes that the bong belongs to Dad and she's broken a bong and she feels so guilty." My mom was like, "I think we need like a separate area for the drug paraphernalia, John."
Learning lots, learning lots. Bree and Jessie are learning lots. They'll learn so much, their heads will grow. There won't be anything they don't know. They'll make Einstein look like a stupid schmo. And you can learn lots too with Bree and Jessie.
Well, hi there. I'm Bree.
And hello, I'm Jessie.
And we are
and we're learning lots.
It's fantastic. What a topic, huh?
Yeah, I'm excited. Today's episode is about weed.
Yep, a very special substance that feels immediately taboo to me. The second it's flown out of our mouth, I want to retreat inward. So I will be pushing myself to express myself and share my experience and not act like such a, I don't know, uptight person.
I've always been around weed. What about you, Brie? When was your first interaction with weed? Do you remember?
Oh, I do. I thought I didn't. I thought that maybe the weed had blown it away. But no, I actually remember. So I was filming a movie in Rhode Island, and it was my first film, like, away from home. And I had never been around weed. I felt like it had this like allure and like mystery, and it was scary, and it's like so much about set and setting, the whole thing. And I ended up in a dorm room at Brown, and this was a great dorm room. This dorm room had a Dave Matthews Band poster. This dorm room had like a hang in there type like landscape inspirational poster. One of my castmates was friends with this guy, and they started passing like a joint around. And I was like, no, I'm good. And I just didn't feel like that was the moment for me. And then everyone's talking. And I just remember at one point looking over at my friend and I was like, could not stop laughing. And my first weed experience was being hotboxed in a dorm room.
Secondhand high.
I got secondhand high for my first time, which is so me to be like, no, I'm not going to do that. And then the universe goes, here you go, honey. Let go, let God. I ended up at the Frisbee team's frat house. I was having a pretty good time until the cops knocked at the door because of noise. And I, of course, freaked out because I'm me and because I'm high. And I ended up crawling out of a window and I ran and then realized I didn't know where I was. I swear this is true. A very, very tall man. He was like 6 feet tall, maybe taller than that. And he was in a homemade suit of armor because he had been LARPing. He was doing live action role playing. I was in the snow and he came up to me and my friends and was like, do you need a ride? We ended up getting in.
No.
He escorted us. He was so kind, made sure that we were okay to get back to our hotel. I remember running through the lobby and running into my hotel room and—
The cops were still after you.
Believe me, the cops were after me.
Hold on. So I understand from this story that—
Nope, this is airtight. No questions. No questions.
Okay, that's fine, but still, I'm a little confused. Because your moral compass and your, you know, training told you weed's a danger, be careful with weed, the cops are after you, but get in a car with a strange man who's in a costume?
It all made sense at the time. Let's be clear, I didn't think the cops were after me. I'd never, like, been to a house party. I was, like, homeschooled. I didn't go to those things. So everybody else around me was like, oh, the cops, they just knock on the door and say, be quiet, and then we just keep going. I thought, this is a serious offense. And I was, of course, ready to flee. At the moment of there being any sort of trouble, I was out of there. I was not taking one. I was not standing strong with the Frisbee team. I was out. Are you stoned right now?
I'm not stoned right now. Are you?
No.
Here's what I have to say. I've smoked a lot of weed and I smoke a lot of weed and I can't do it before I have to be responsible. Because even if it's something I could technically do stoned, like have a conversation with my best friend, the second I'm putting a microphone in front of my face, it's a professional thing and I will freak out. I will feel like I'm not living up to my potential. It's like a roadblock sometimes with words where I just get like very self-conscious and anxious about, am I explaining myself the best? Am I being eloquent? And it's all the same stuff I struggle with when I'm not stoned. It's just like under a microscope.
Yeah, it's exaggerated.
Yeah. And it's always like a feeling of, am I going to let someone down?
Right. So I would not say that I am very good at it. I don't do it very often. Do you know about the time that I accidentally got the highest?
And someone told you you were the root of all the problems in the world while you were stoned?
Oh, no, no, no. Not that. I forgot about that. That was good. No, the time that I accidentally got super high right before a meeting with a head of a studio. It's a good story for me because if I didn't have this, I would just be sitting here agreeing with you going, it stresses me out. Like, I can't function. If I have to be responsible, I can't do it. So the long and the short of it was I was training and I was training really hard for like many hours and I was really amped up with all this like adrenaline. And then right afterwards, I had a meeting with the studio head and I just felt super amped. It felt like I'd had just way too much caffeine. Maybe I did, but I just felt like I had been lifting weights and I was just having this like crazy high. And I was like, I need to chill out. I'm going to be too aggressive in this meeting. And so I remembered that a friend had given me like a vape pen that was, they told me was CBD. I'd never tried it, but they said it's great. It's CBD. And I was like, you're sure? Like, absolutely. So I'm just like sucking on what I think is like a CBD pen, having way too much fun. And I feel like I'm the coolest person ever, by the way. I'm like, look at me. I'm vaping. I'm such a rebel, like an unbelievable. And what's insane about it is that 5 minutes before the meeting, the whole world was like, wrong. I'm like, I'm so high. Like, I'm the highest maybe I've ever been in my whole life. And now it's like, 3 minutes before the meeting, and what am I going to do? Like, I can't cancel now. And I was like, what do I do? What do I do? What do I do? It was so beyond my comprehension that was actually happening that I was like, I guess in my stone thoughts, I was like, I just got to follow this through. And so I got in and the waiting room was packed with people and I didn't know what to do. So I just sat in a corner and the receptionist came over and was like, it's really busy in here. Why don't we give you an office to hang out? And so I hung out, splayed out on this couch and they were like, can we get you anything to drink? And I was like, can I have a really big iced tea? Just like the biggest iced tea ever. And they're like, yeah, anything else? I was like, and a straw. I'm like, okay. And like, they're running a little bit late. Is that okay? And I was like, they can take as much time as I want. And I just laid there and drank this iced tea and really didn't know what I was going to do, but I felt quite calm because I was like, well, worst thing that happens is I just say what happened because it was just a mistake. But I'm hoping that I don't have to say anything. They called me in, walking into the meeting, and the door opened and I saw them in their big fancy office and they turned to me and said, hi. And the second I looked at them, I was like, maybe they're stoned too.
Yes.
And I had an incredible meeting. It went so well. We had such a great conversation. I don't remember it, but I know it went really well. And it was really lovely. And I have such a control issue. So hard for me to let go. I drink maybe once a year now. It's just like, Jesus, like relax. And so I feel like sometimes I just get smacked with it because I'm probably just holding on too tight. And then universe says, no, no, honey.
I was just also reminded of the time that someone offered us an edible, a brownie, and we were heading to an award ceremony that we knew without a doubt was just a party that we would get to go to and have fun at. And so we were like, okay, yeah, we're young, we're hip, we're cool, we'll eat this brownie. We eat this brownie, we walk into the award ceremony, very casual and fun, and we're hanging out, and we're like, okay, the award ceremony is going to start. Everyone, like, come into this area. Mm-hmm. We all go into the area and they start talking. They're like, the first award is going to young filmmakers who made a short film about, and they start describing our short film. And the two of us looked at each other and we're like, wow, someone else made a short a lot like ours.
Yeah, something's very strange.
There was no part of it that was like, oh my gosh, they're talking about our short. We were like, wow, someone really ripped off our short. They called our names. And I remember you looked at me and you were like, you're good at talking when you're stoned. You must talk. And I got up there and I thanked art. I said, I want to thank all the art and all the yes. artists for inspiring us.
Got to thank all the art. Got to give respect to the art, you know? Listen, we've had some great times with weed. I've certainly had bad trips, but that's not really the extent of what it is we're talking about in terms of the darker side of how weed is viewed. I guess we can just say within America, because I don't really feel like it's our business to talk about other countries, because I really don't know the rules in every other place in the world. But I mean, would you say that it's becoming more understood as being like commonplace or more accepted? It feels like it is, but also we live in California, so we're very much in that bubble where, I mean, we've seen a lot of progress.
Yeah, I mean, that's a great point. My perspective is definitely the child of someone who constantly smoked weed and then grew up going to like arts programs. I was always around people who weren't saying weed was like a terrible thing. But my mom is a political consultant and she was a part of the team that helped legalize weed. And I remember her talking about it early on, specifically in relation to decriminalizing marijuana offenses and getting people out of jail. Over the last few years, while the social element, especially in my friend groups, it seems like weed is super acceptable and you can get it wherever you want. It's like a Starbucks, it's on every corner. I've definitely noticed that, like, with the bloggers posting about like smoking weed and doing yoga and the benefits, there is this dark cloud of the fact that there are so many people currently struggling with the fact that they were carrying weed and then they got a life sentence for it.
Yeah. And I do think like the pandemic also exaggerated things too when we were getting into the topic of essential business and what was allowed to be open. And we had dispensaries for marijuana that were open as essential businesses. I mean, we had lines around the block for MedMen, and yet we have prisons full of people that have long sentences, if not life sentences, over the thing that we're calling essential. So I'm just really grateful that we have this guest today. We have Chelsea Handler. You know who she is, but if you don't, she's an American comedian, actress, writer, television host, producer, and an activist. I'm really excited that she wanted to come on the show and talk about weed. So here we go.
Hi, Bree. Hi.
Hi. How are you doing?
I'm so well. How are you doing?
I'm good.
Hi, I'm Jesse.
Hi, Jesse. It's so nice to meet you.
It's so nice to meet you. Can I just fangirl for a second? You're such a good interviewer. And so part of me is like, I just want to interview you on how to be better at this thing I'm trying to do. I fell in love with you on Chelsea lately. Like, obsessed. And I would just binge the roundtable conversations you would have with like Lonnie Love and all those comedians. And I remember being like, I don't know if I'm fast enough to come up with jokes this fast, but like, I want to do something like that. And then watching your interviews, and you could interview a wall. I mean, you could have been interviewing a stuffed animal. It was the most entertaining thing ever. And then watching you like come into this whole other chapter of activism and all of your stuff on Netflix has been so, oh God, my word choice, like inspirational. Is that cool enough to say? And like educational, I've learned so much from you, but especially like the humility that you bring to it and the fact that you're like coming at it from such a casual, like, normal perspective. Like, you're not pretentious about it. And I really appreciate the way that you approach these topics. And I was freaking out when I heard you agreed to do this podcast. So thank you. I really, really appreciate that I get to spend this hour with you.
Well, how great of an intro is that? I mean, how sweet are you? I love it. Thank you. Thank you. And yeah, that's the biggest compliment I could ever receive. That's just made my day, babe. Thank you.
Thanks for being here with us. You chose the topic of weed. So do you want to tell us a little bit about why you wanted to talk about this today?
Oh, yeah. Well, cannabis is a passion of mine. I guess the legalization of weed in California was a real turning point because it was the first time you could actually read what you're putting in your system. There was an educative component that had been missing for so long. So when it did become legalized and you go to places like MedMen or whatever your local dispensary is, everything is laid out for you. So you know that if you're taking THC versus CBD and what the ratio is, and you know the strains, and some things put you in an up mood, some things are for sleeping, some things are for anxiety. There was all of a sudden this like kind of laid out framework for it. So it was much more inviting, right, to all of us. Because if you're like me and you've taken edibles from strangers,
boy, have we.
Yes, yes. You know, take a cookie and you think everything's going to be fine. And then 8 hours later, you wake up on an airplane and think you're at a movie theater and try to leave. You know, I didn't want things like that happening to me in my life. At my age, that's slightly embarrassing. So I loved it. And I loved being able to share with all my family, with all my friends and their parents and their friends and anyone who's having an ailment, like a sleeping issue or like, I just love to prescribe medication. And pharmacological industry in this country can't be trusted. So I don't want to be taking medication. I don't want to prescribe people medication. So anything that grows out of the ground and is connected to Mother Earth, it's like we all really need to get behind it because it's going to help so many people.
So I said weed and then you said cannabis. Is there a specific distinction as to why?
No, I just say cannabis because I feel like, you know, there's so many stigmas attached to weed and smoking weed. And then if you're a pothead, you're lazy. It's like, I've written 6 books stoned and they were number one New York Times bestsellers. There's no such, that's such bullshit. I want to destigmatize it along with, you know, all the other women in the cannabis industry. But also, it's a functional drug. I don't even like the word drug for it. It's a functional medicine is what it is. So I feel like we just kind of invokes that, oh, you're going to, you know, I always go, oh, get a doobie for me when I'm leaving the house. So I do use that kind of language, but I know when I'm talking about it in a public way, I think cannabis is just the more responsible way to try to destigmatize.
It's true. Like, there's biases that are deeply embedded in all of us. And I'd say in particular for white people, it's just deep, horrible things in us. We don't even realize where things are coming from. So the term marijuana is not just like a sort of innocent term. It was weaponized.
Yeah, I thought it was like the scientific term for it. It's not.
No, not at all. When I was 16 years old, I lived with my brother in this town called Branchburg, New Jersey. And I dated a black man named Tyshawn for like 2 years. And we got caught with a bag of weed on us 3 times. We were having a good time in high school. But every time we got caught, I was let go. The police would say, go back to your neighborhood. And he was arrested 3 times. He was the captain of the football team. He was a great basketball player. He had a scholarship to Villanova and he never went. And he spent 14 years in jail, not because of those instances, but those instances were the lead up to making sure that he was in that system and it was hard to get out of that prison system. They're not looking for white people to screw up. They're looking for a black person to screw up. The disproportionate amount of people, of black people who get arrested for the same thing that white people do is basically the basis of this piece that I wrote for Time. I'm launching a cannabis brand, which has been a huge mountain to climb. And we're not even close yet because it's such a male-dominated industry. It's nascent, so it's a new industry. There's a lot of moving parts still. One of my biggest priorities is like we have to give a portion of the proceeds to decarceration, to people who are still in prison while they're legalizing it now, 16 recreationally, 37 medicinally. So that was kind of the impetus for that article. I wanted to really write out, we can't just all start benefiting from the cannabis industry and leave all these people behind. So my ex-boyfriend, whose name is Tyshawn, he was in my documentary that I did for Netflix called Hello Privilege. It's me, Chelsea, which was, you know, the first time that he and I had had a conversation since I was 16 years old.
It was kind of romantic. There was like some some sexual tension in that.
I have sexual tension with a lot of people. Yeah. It was cute to see him. But that was an instance of him explaining to me how easy it was for me to walk into his world and then leave when I was bored. And he wasn't ever able to walk into my world. At the time, I was young and I was stupid, but you know, we're all young and stupid. And all you can do is know better and act more diligently and get more focused about what you're contributing instead of taking. And this is an opportunity for me when I do finally come out with my brand, whenever that will be, is an opportunity for me to make a big statement about sharing the success of everything with the people that have had something taken away from them.
That's really amazing. It feels honestly sort of taboo in my heart, like to even be like, oh, we're doing a podcast about this, even though I don't actually think there's anything wrong with it. And at the same time, what we're talking about is that it can be really fun. You can have a great time with it. It can be totally safe. And at the same time, there's this history of just abuse and it becoming a way to incarcerate black and brown people. As we're, you know, three white women sitting here talking and holding like the privilege in the room of saying, yeah, we've had a good time with it. And we can continue to have a good time with it, but also like we have to know the roots, the history, where it came from and what's happening right now. I mean, that there's people sitting in prison right now and weed shops in California were an essential business during the pandemic.
Yeah, exactly. Weed is weed. Like I like to like be loud about all of the things that are taboo because the more we normalize things like abortion, you know, people don't want to hear about that. Yeah, I don't want to talk about it, but I feel like I have to. You know what I mean? I don't really want to talk about my abortions. I don't want to talk about things like that, but I feel like it's a responsibility for other women to tell your story so everybody knows they're not alone. And the story with weed is a little bit analogous to abortion. It's like, look at how normalized it's become now. Look at how normalized. And if you think about all those people sitting and doing 10, 20 year sentences, can you imagine how that must feel? How you must feel like nothing, like you don't matter to the system at all?
Yes.
Yeah.
There's work all of us can do to try to like acknowledge the fact that racism is ever present.
Right.
This to me, this conversation about cannabis and how it correlates with racism, it's interesting because I don't view this as a political issue. To me, this is still just like a human rights issue. But I do feel like there are people who view this as being like a Democrat's fight or something, that this is not for everybody. Or do you feel like this is a fight for everybody?
I think it's a fight for everybody. I mean, I can understand why it skews more Democratic because it feels liberal, but there's so much money to be made in cannabis. And once the pharmaceutical industries are fully on board, which they are, of course, Republicans will follow suit. It's a moneymaker and it's going to change the economy. So there's that aspect of it. In that respect, it's good for Democrats and it's good for independents and Republicans.
It's good for everybody. But when it comes down to like passing laws, it's being funded by Democrats. And then like when you look at private prisons, that's being
funded by Republicans.
Yes.
I don't know every private prison and I don't know every person that signed on every bill. So I just want to clarify because it starts to feel like we're like putting people into buckets. But yeah, I guess that's where things start to get divisive. And that's where I'm just seeing a lot of issues these days is with like everybody taking a team and then just fighting in the direction that their team fights in instead of having some critical thinking and going, like, do I actually think that a person should be spending their life in prison because they had like a tiny bit of weed on them? Like in my heart, like, does that feel right that someone is in prison over that? Like that just feels like a human rights issue. And that to me is like everybody's fight.
Listen, the United States has 2 million people incarcerated. We have the highest prison population in the world. And yes, we have, you know, 300 and something million people living here, but we're not the most populous country. We're doing something wrong. So yes, it's not a right or left issue. It's like, do we want this many people locked up in prisons when there's probably other places for these people to be? Canada, for instance, I'm a big skier. So I spend a lot of time in Canada and I have a lot of friends in Canada. And my friend works for the healthcare system in Canada. And every mentally unfit person has 24-hour care. Anybody who's mentally unstable or anyone who's challenged in any way that can't take care of themselves is taken care of by the government. God, what would that mean for our prison population? How many people are just in there because they were homeless or they're a vet and then they got caught panhandling or they got caught smoking weed or they got caught whatever and now they're in jail? Like we really have to dismantle the systems that we have, this patriarchal system and this kind of sexist system and this subjugation. That is a human rights issue, Bree. And I agree with you that shouldn't be a right or left issue. Why do we lock people up in big prisons like animals? And who are the most people that are in there? You know, let's take a look at that. And it just mirrors our whole history of this country. It's just like, okay, it's another way to keep people down. My ex-boyfriend, Tyshawn, didn't deserve to be in prison for 15 years. Yes, he committed crimes, but why did he commit those crimes, right? And petty crimes. Why was the neighborhood he lived in, why was everyone on food stamps? And why did they not have access to the same things and clean parks and clean water fountains and everywhere that we did 15 minutes away? His area was clearly an area that had been neglected. It's a measurable kind of subjugation of people. And you know how many white guys at fraternity parties get caught being wasted or having weed or having coke, other drugs, and get off? I mean, all the time, probably every night. It's just not the same thing. So that's something that's undeniable also. It's kind of a moot argument at this point, because if somebody doesn't believe that how black and brown people are disproportionately affected, then that's a hard conversation to have. There's proof everywhere.
The war on drugs is systematically racist.
There's nothing not racist about it. Putting drugs in those communities when people are weak and they don't have jobs. There's all these factors that weigh into it.
So what do we do? Do you have tips on how we get involved, how we get more active and more invested in this and how we can use our voices specifically as white women to help decriminalize marijuana?
Well, there's a couple of organizations that I like to support. The Sentencing Project, there's the Marshall Project. I'm a member of White People for Black Lives, Black Lives Matter. You know, all of these organizations just kind of keep you up to speed. Harness, America Ferrera's organization is incredible. But specifically for decarceration, Google, like decarceration, all these organizations come up. And it's a matter of you can help fund people to hire their attorneys to actually get them out of jail, or you can help them when they do get out of jail to start a life, which is really important. The same thing that you can do for refugees, people who are coming into a system that they know nothing about and haven't been a part of for so long. It's a great entry point. So there are organizations that help people, you know, stabilize their income and their housing when they get out of jail and get them off on the right foot. Or you can support attorney's fees to help people. People reach out to me individually all the time on Instagram and DM me. And whenever I can, I always try to connect people. Or you can support the legislation in your state, because it is state by state. You have to know what the legislation is and you have to vote for it. Those are a couple of things that you can do. I wish I had a better answer. I wish there was something, you know, that you could donate to right now. But, and also just keep in mind, if you have a donation of $5, that's great. That's enough. Don't think anything is too small, because it isn't.
You said earlier that you started exploring cannabis and then you started getting maybe friends and family into it and explaining to them that there's lots of different uses. Can you talk a little bit about the different uses or maybe the different ways that you use it? Just so people know that there's so much in terms of like strain, variety, strength, that there's more than just, we're out of just like buying it from someone and not knowing what it is. You know, you can actually get really specific.
Yeah. So there's microdosing now. So microdosing is where it's at for everything. So like psilocybin, LSD, all of these things are getting approved for like guided recovery from PTSD. They said something like 75% of people who took 3 doses of psilocybin guided by a therapist within a year had no more PTSD. So these are like hard concrete data that is coming forward now. But with regard to cannabis, the microdosing is just a whole new ticket. So we have family vacations every year. I have a very big family and we go skiing in Christmas, and in the summer we go somewhere else. I remember the first time we had one of the guys working at the house came and just dropped off a bunch of cookies, and he said, these are for adults only. And I was like, well, give them to me, you know? And then every night that week, I would cut up a half a cookie for all of my brothers and sisters, and they would come through the kitchen like in a little single file line, like we're lining up for lunch, and I would hand out all my older brothers and sisters a half a cookie for you, a quarter of a cookie for you, knowing their tolerances were different. And after that vacation, I was like, hey, we just had the best vacation we've ever had in our lives, you guys. Am I right? And they were like, amazing. Yeah, they're like, marijuana. I'm like, yeah, we're going to bring this every year. And it was like that for our family. So when I show up on our family vacation, everyone comes to my room. They all get their supplies for the week. And my sister is a perfect example. She's a recovering Mormon and she doesn't drink. She doesn't do anything. She can't handle any of that stuff. She loves like a 0.2-0.5 milligram. I have these blueberries that I love and they're 5 milligrams and I cut them in half and give her a half. She loves it. Once I realized how much cannabis had changed in the world, and I was like trying everything because I was like, what's going to be good? I'm like a doctor. I'm like, what's good for her? What's good for her? And I remember my family was at my house for Thanksgiving a couple of years ago, and I gave my sister a half a blueberry. I said, hey, you're going to like this. Let me know how you feel in 45 minutes. And I was taking notes in my journal just to make sure I knew what the effect of each edible was. And like 2 hours later, she came in. She's like, I feel so good. I feel so good. And she goes, can I have another one? I was like, well, yeah, you're in a safe place. Like, what's the worst thing that could happen? And then another hour went by. She walked into the living room and I was with my 2 brothers. And she had a huge turkey, frozen turkey under her arm. She's like, I'm hungry. And I was like, oh no. And I said, well, are you really? I mean, we're going to bake a turkey. I mean, and she's like, it just reminded me of mom and Christmas. And I just got it. And I was like, come on, sissy. I go, we're going to go to sleep. And she carried the turkey upstairs while I was walking her upstairs to my bedroom to put her to bed.
Gosh.
She had the turkey. She goes, but what about the turkey? Are we going to cook it? I said, yeah, we'll cook it. I said, we'll cook it in my sauna. And I opened the door to my sauna in my bedroom and I put it in and forgot about it for 2 days. So now I have a sauna that smells like a turkey. I just remember I got in bed with her, you know, and we're cuddling because only you could do that with your sister, you know, well, your best friends, but your sissies are just like, yeah, so special. And we were just lying in bed together and we were giggling and laughing. And I said, isn't this the best feeling? And she goes, yeah, how long do we get to act like this for? Like, we're old. And I was like, we get to act like this forever. It was just one of those moments. It's like, you're not out of control. It's light. It's fun. It's easy breezy. Like, she just needs one certain thing. And I knew exactly what she needed, right? And I think that's true for everyone. For me, I have problems sleeping. I used to take sleeping pills all the time. I don't have to do that. I take an edible before I go to bed. And I know how to meditate now. And cannabis helped me meditate for the first time, like 4 or 5 years ago. Like, I couldn't do it. I couldn't sit still. Didn't think I was doing it right. And then finally, I just started getting a little stoned before I meditated because it slows me down and it really sands down my edges. So I have a high tolerance for people when I'm a little bit stoned, a higher tolerance, I should say, when I'm a little bit stoned. Yes. You know what I mean? I mean, I joke about it, but it's true. It was like my gateway drug for meditation. It brought me to meditation in a way where I can sit still now and close my eyes for 20 minutes and not be judgy about whether I'm really doing it well or not. It's a different state of being.
What would you say, and I wonder if you have any personal experience with giving someone more than they should have had, and how do you coach someone through if maybe they've self-prescribed more milligrams than they really should be ingesting?
Yeah, I mean, I definitely have done that. I'm not going to pretend I haven't. I had my friend's 40th birthday in Cabo a couple of years ago, and everyone came to me as usual and was like, can we have an edible? And I had these wild edibles that were 10 milligrams that I thought were five. So I just handed them out to everybody. And then like two of the girls were just laid out on the couch, and then people walk by and they're like, did you get your edibles from Chelsea? I was like, you guys, I don't want this rap. Like, please don't ask me for drugs if you can't handle what's going to happen. But so I have been guilty of that, but I try very hard. My British friend, she had never tried cannabis ever. She's just a drinker. She's just not into anything like that. And I got her into it big time. And I take a lot of pride in that, because now she just gets it herself. She's like, this is the best. She's like, I've never felt my shoulders go down. Now she takes it all the time, you know, and there's different reasons for it. Anxiety is one. I know a lot of older people really respond well to it. A lot of my parents' friends, I'm always giving stuff to. They think it's for the pain, but what they really don't understand or accept maybe is that it is for your brain too. It just calms everything down a little bit. And certain people don't react well to it, right? So certain people do get anxiety when they get stoned. But I also think it's a mental kind of fitness that you have to have. When you go into something, you really have to set an intention with everything you do it, and all day long. I know it sounds corny, but it's so true. So that when I'm going to get stoned, I'm always like, I'm going to have a good time. Like, I'm going to be present. This is going to be fun. And when you're microdosing, you don't have to worry about cannabis taking over. You're in charge of your high, not cannabis.
I'm a huge weed microdosing fan. I'm just going to out myself. It's not taboo, y'all. I'll do a 0.5 and live my life.
We're like going to a concert. I'm like, I have weed mints. And you're like, do you have a 0.5? I'm like, I have a 5. I have a 5 milligram.
Yeah. Jesse and I are on very different levels in terms of what gets us turned on.
I have 20 milligrams, but I also brought the little 5 ones. You're like, 0.5? I'm like, no, no, no. I don't have that to offer you.
I didn't even know there were 0.5s.
I was so sober during the pandemic. I was so painfully sober that I got the highest I was the entire pandemic off of a CBD tincture that I took to go to sleep. It's not okay. So I started working on it. I just want to say, after that, I was like, I'm not cool with this. Like, this is too clean living. Like, I gotta like change it up a little bit. But alcohol is really hard for me. Once I started training more, it just hits me a lot harder. I can maybe have like a glass of champagne with dinner. I don't feel great. I tend to go in the depressive space. So like, it doesn't really work for me. I can do it. But I found having like a weed drink, we'll make mocktails and put like a tincture in it. And that is like amazing. I love it so much. And I feel like I hold all my stress in my stomach. So it's really good for my intestines, or at least that's what I'm telling myself, that it's good for me. And it feels like it's relaxing my muscles, and I tend to get very stressed. It is really helpful.
I used to drink a lot, you know, and I still can have a drink once in a while, but I'm completely with you. Like, there's a huge difference to how you feel, you know, having some cannabis the night before versus how you feel having 2 or more drinks, right? I could get away with that in my 20s, and I could function and function and function. And as you get older, you're like, this doesn't feel good. I don't look good. I remember the first time I didn't drink for like 10 days because I was doing a photo shoot or something. I'm sure it had everything to do with vanity. I was like, oh my God, my cheeks are different. Like, my whole face shape. You don't realize what you're holding on to when you have alcohol in your system. It's just like 10 pounds of bloat. And people want to fight about it. And the people that want to fight about that refuse to take 10 days off to see the difference that their body will have without having alcohol in it. So as an alternative, that was one of the major motivations for me, was like, I would have loved to cut back on my drinking naturally without having cannabis as an alternative. But cannabis made me just drink less.
I can't drink anymore. Exactly what you're talking about. If I have 1 or 2 drinks the next morning, I feel depressed. I don't like how I look in the mirror. I don't like how I think.
Yeah.
It's a chemical thing that I can acknowledge like the second it happens. I'm like, oh, here come the sads.
Yeah. Well, because if you are a depressive, like, yeah, that's exactly the straight direct route is alcohol to get there.
We've talked about weed like calming you down, but do you ever use weed to like pump you up for stuff? Do you ever smoke weed before working out?
Oh, always. But that's more to do with my trainer's personality than actual weed. I mean, he's so hard to be around. Every morning he asks me how I am 3 times in a row. I'm not in a place where I could say, can you just ask me that once? Instead, I just smoke a joint and I just keep answering him every time. Like, it's a new question. I go, I'm great. Thanks for asking. And then he asks me again 10 minutes later.
It's the high tolerance.
Yeah. Can you perform stand up or like go on live TV having just smoked weed?
Right now I'm in the beginning of a tour. So I'm not going to be stoned while I'm getting my new hour, like, perfect. I have an hour of material to memorize. You're not screwing around. No drinking, no smoking. But once I get it down, in about 2 months, you know, of being on tour, then I'll probably have a little bit more fun with it. When I write my books, I write them clear first thing in the morning. I'm up from 5:30 to 9:30 every morning when I'm writing a book. When I go back to touch it up and punch it up and put the jokes in is when I smoke weed. And I use it for that purpose. I'm like, okay, now let's make this horrible story funny. I write jokes all the time when I'm stoned. I think of things and I put them in my notes section. It takes you on a different little bit of a path. But again, it's all about you controlling your dosage and controlling your mood. You know, if you're the type of personality that typically gets paranoid or gets scared, it's like you have to have a conversation with yourself so that that isn't your reaction. Even with the smallest amounts, like, oh, you know, girls are always like, oh, well, weed and the munchies. Like, I don't smoke weed because I don't want to get fat. And I can't control myself. There's a strain called THCV, which kind of works as an appetite suppressant. It's like weed's Adderall without the deleterious impact. And it kills your appetite. And I've tried it. So when I come out with my brand, I'm like, that is the first thing out of the gate is providing women with THC that doesn't make you want to eat a pizza.
You mentioned your tour. I know you're currently in the middle of a stand-up tour called Vaccinated and Horny. Will you tell us a little bit about the show, why you chose that title?
Listen, I'm very excited to be a reason people are coming back together in large groups for the first time. And I wanted it to make sure everyone knew that I'm ready and waiting to make you laugh, because as a single person, I'm not going to pretend that I don't feel very confident about my life decision-making skills, about remaining childless and alone, especially during the last year of this pandemic. I had my sister invade my house with her three adult children, and I just couldn't believe it. I was like, why do I have to be part of this? I have remained single and alone my whole life so that there were not three children in my house. And my sister's like, what do you want me to do? I'm like, I have to leave. Like, I had to move out of my own house. Okay, so finally, my sister left and the kids left. They were there for 3 months. Finally, my sister's like, we're making you crazy. I was like, you can stay. I'm like, but can they go? And then they left and I was like, okay, I'm going to have sex again because this is going on. This has been 3 months. We thought it was going to be 2 weeks. Now it could be 2 years. I got a COVID health test so I could interview potential penetrators and then give them the test in my backyard. I give them a nasal swab, then I, you know, go inside, run the diagnostics for 20 or 30 minutes. And then in that time, if that man had said anything that was annoying, like, I don't think masks work, or if I saw a pinky ring or a belt I didn't like, I would just come back out and say, you're positive. You need to leave my house right now. You have COVID.
Wow. What a process.
She's paving the way for wealthy women to date. This is what we needed.
Yeah, wealthy, white, privileged. Yes, exactly. I like to always have white privilege right on my forehead. But yeah, so I talk a lot about that and my personal experience with COVID. And I, you know, I was alone with my dogs for the first time in my life ever. And they don't respect me. So that was a hot mess. They think my housekeeper, Mabel, is their birth mother. And that I'm an au pair that just comes through every 2 weeks. So getting to know them was really ridiculous. I took them to Canada. I took them skiing for the winter, which they hated. Of course. It was so funny. I went to Canada and I walk outside and I'm taking them for a walk and I don't put my dogs on a leash because they're both so lazy. They would never attack anything. You know, they can't even like see that far. And their brother, sister, Bert and Bernice are their names. They look like teddy bears. You know, they're really cute. They're chows. And so I was walking them one morning and this woman came out and she saw them walking and she's like, oh, God, I got so scared. And I'm like, really? Like, okay. I go, I'll get a leash. I'm so sorry. They're just not that active. Like, they're not going to attack anything. And she goes, no, it's not for me. Somebody could think that they're bears. I was like, they're both wearing handkerchiefs. Nobody's going to think that. Nobody's going to think that these two are bears.
Oh, I could ask you questions forever. I'm so grateful. I honestly have like 4 other interviews I could do with you. And can we just hang out or something? I could ask you questions about life.
Oh, I would love that, you guys.
I would say I'd make you guys mocktails, but I don't think you'd feel it. I think it would just be juice to you.
Well, we would have to probably doctor ours up a little bit more than yours, Brie. But yeah.
Okay, that's fine. But we'll have a good time.
But I like what you're talking about with the mixing of the drinks. Like, I've been on a lot of cannabis events where you can just have it in your drink so you do feel like you're having a cocktail. And I think that is definitely the way of the future.
I think so, too. And I'm glad that we could take the time to talk about this and make people more aware. There's a lot here.
Thanks, girl. So nice. So fun. Talk to you later.
Thank you.
Bye.
Bye.
Gosh.
What did you learn from Chelsea?
First of all, I just love hearing people talk about their experience, and it makes me feel less shameful. And it is interesting that like I don't have any shame talking about drinking alcohol, but it's not like every experience I've had or that the people in my life have had have been positive experiences. It's also a thing that can take many twists and turns. But for some reason, this thing, because we haven't all agreed across the globe that this is okay, that it feels like dangerous. And I actually enjoyed the danger. And I really enjoyed Chelsea being so candid about it and talking about that it can be loving, it can brought her family together in certain instances, but also in her telling her personal story about her ex-boyfriend and how different his experience was being a Black man. I think it's just a really important aspect of this to be able to hold both of those things. And please do your part, educate yourself if you were interested in it. There's lots of ways to get involved. As with anything, it is a really complicated issue, good, bad, weird, and some of it is pretty sad. I think we can do better.
Yeah. Me too. Well said. Before we go, I just want to do a quick shout out to all of the people who've been sending us messages on Instagram because we read them and we love them. And it's so special to get this kind of support and feedback from you all. So thank you for listening and thank you for engaging with us. We love you. We'll see you next time.
Love you. Bye.
Bye.